This week on It's So Bad, glory to our Stotska as we play an ad. Papers, please, to the endless list here on It's So Bad. Welcome, Steve.
Mike.
Matt. 1.0.
Hello, comrades.
Well, actually, specifically, they didn't include the word comrades, so that they didn't.
But I did.
But yes,
I
we are
see
adding
through the fog.
We are adding Papers, Please to the endless list. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you find your good podcasts and your bad podcasts. We are adding this game this week to our endless list, which is our list of video games, all the video games, for everything from Super Mario 64 at our number one currently, all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser at number 90. This is our 91st entry to the endless list, Papers, Please, which is a game from August of 2013, developed by 3909 LLC and also published by that. Actually developed by a gentleman by the name of Lucas Pope, who runs that company. It is a, would you call it a puzzle game?
That's like a sim, right? Like a work sim?
Yeah, I guess it's a work sim because you have that added layer of managing your resources.
I would call it a puzzle game, though. Like, making sure, like, they always throw, like, new, like, twists about, like, what documentation a person needs to have and whether something's a forgery or, you know, be on the lookout for this person who's a suspicious individual. So it's definitely got some strong puzzle elements to it.
It's a game essentially about checking passports and managing your resources that you get from checking passports. You are basically a customs officer who is at a border checkpoint between two countries.
I think it's the Republica, or what is the country?
Republia.
I thought it was that border.
Okay.
They say it towards the end, because they talk about the border shutting down, and they refer to which border it is.
Okay. You're just checking passports, and if you say that out loud and you tell somebody about this game, they might think that it's really boring, but it's actually quite fun to check passports in this game, and challenging sometimes.
Yeah, it can get pretty hard, you know? Like, you gotta be sharp, you gotta be checking all the angles, like, verifying their audio logs, like, they put you through your paces. It's fun. I've never had more fun being a bureaucrat than I have in this game.
So you start out in this game just stamping passports, and then they add restrictions on who can come in as you go. So you will first receive word that you can't allow people from a certain country in, and that's fine. But then days pass, and you're going from that to if people come from certain countries, they need a work permit. They need a reason for being there. Then if they need a work permit. They need a residency permit. They need to have the right stamps on their forms. If they don't have the right stamp, you have to check it against your manual. Then you have to check and make sure if they say that they're one person and their passport doesn't line up, you have to fingerprint them. And there's like a lot of different layers that this game goes into eventually. But it starts off with you just checking passports, and you are in what is like a totalitarian government. It's not really descript, but it's modeled after Eastern European countries in the 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah, the game takes place in winter 1982, and you keep track of that because you're always looking at expiration dates, you're always looking at issue dates, date of births, things like that.
And so you are part of the glorious Arstotska? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I say it with a little less Arstotska? Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, I always said it as Arstotska in my head.
I've never had to say it out loud.
It, like, I always thought it was like a play on aristocracy. Like,
oh, might be
interesting.
So the guy who developed it first put this out on Steam, iOS. It also came to the Vita eventually. This game came out in 2013, so just kind of put that into perspective for our ranking. Other games that came out in 2013 are Gone Home, Don't Starve, Outlast, Brothers, Risk of Rain. So those games originally came out in 2013. Have you guys played any of those games? I have not.
I don't think I have.
I played Risk of Rain 1, but I've not played any of those others.
Brothers is pretty cool. It's by the same guy who made that the game about the two gentlemen in prison. That's a co-op game.
Way Out or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's similar where you control, except you are one person and control two people. So it's, yeah. It's
this,
pretty cool. It's
this game I remember being like one of the first mega like indie hits where it was made kind of by one person, at least what my memory tells me.
So Lucas Pope is who developed this game. He is a former Naughty Dog developer. He worked on the Uncharted series, Uncharted 1 and 2, and then he left to make this game. Before that, though, he worked on a few different projects for a company called Ratloop. He worked on things like Quake mods, and he made a car game called Gearhead Garage, came out in the early 2000s. He always wanted to make smaller games, but in the early 2000s, it was really, really hard because you needed to... So, for example, he has this example that he gives that when he wanted to sell to a place like Walmart, they needed 5,000 copies of the game ready to go in order to sell it. So they need physical copies of a box and a CD, and they needed to manufacture all that. So there was a lot of upfront costs. We've mentioned this before in other podcasts, but in the late 2000s, the advent of Steam and digital distribution led to a lot of indie developers being able to put stuff out really easily. So he made a ton of money working at Naughty Dog, and he made the decision to go off on his own and make his own thing, which was Papers, Please. He's mentioned that, so he moved from the U.S. to Japan, where his wife was, and then he moved to Singapore as well to work in game development for a little bit after Naughty Dog, and he became interested in making a game about checking passports, so that was the earliest frame of what the game would be, and then he developed all of this, like, world around that, so making Arstotzka, making the other games in it all were developed around the idea of making a game about checking passports. And then he created the narrative frame around it, which was dealing with a totalitarian government and being just a cog in a bureaucracy is what eventually it became.
Yeah. So Oberdin is his other game. And you can see the similarities that both start with like a hyper-focused concept, like of a simple sort of mechanical idea of, checking passports. Oberdin is being the insurance adjuster. And it's cool that he knew. It's interesting when, like, sometimes games are designed where they're like this very loose proof of concept without any arts or assets. And he kind of did the opposite, where he like knew exactly what this very simple, straightforward idea would be and then kind of built things around it.
And I think that's from what I've read, that sounds similar to what like a Nintendo does, where they come up with concepts for games first, and then they come up with the frame around that concept.
Yeah. You sort of flesh it out over time.
It's interesting because we just talked about Oregon Trail and like the whole resource management of it, and the kind of like personal family story in this game kind of gets at that. It's like a budgetary element of it, but like as you're checking the passports, like if you make too many mistakes, you'll get docked pay, and then in between each day you'll go home and you'll like, you have to pay your rent, you have to pay for heating, and you can like toggle which ones you have the money to pay for and which we're going to pay for. So you might prioritize, like your family gets sick and you have to prioritize medicine for certain people, but maybe you only have $10 for medicine, so that's enough for two people. So then like you know, there were times I was like, well, my uncle and my mother-in-law aren't getting the money, like, for the medicine. That's going to be my wife and my son. Like, it makes you make those choices as the story goes along. And that's, like, the kind of human narrative element that goes with it.
Yeah, and so you make money by processing people. Through each person that you process, you get a set amount of money. If you are wrong and you let the wrong person in, you get docked money. So you get money taken away from you and your salary.
You get a couple of warnings first, but yeah.
Right. You get two warnings on your third one, you get docked every day.
Yeah, and so that's the pressure that's sort of put on you, is that you can't just, you know, every day that you go to work is 6 minutes of real time. And so you're forced to balance, yeah, putting enough people through to get your income, but not putting so many people through that you're missing, erroneous details to kind of hurt you in the end.
And so one of the things that Lucas Pope was when he made the interface for this, and I don't know if you found this to be the case, but he purposely made the interface clunky so that it would be more difficult for you to process people. That tension would be higher.
It feels like you're jumbling. Like you have like a rule book and then like a daily bulletin that you're managing and that has information. And then you have like all these passports coming out. It feels like you're jumbling a stack of papers with it.
Yeah. And so he did a really good job of making that feel like a little bit more tactile as you're trying to manage the different boxes that you have in your interface.
Well, and like the desk space you have is just too small to actually fit everything on it. So you're always forced to, you know, have something away. Like I know when I was playing it, one of the details you can check is the issuing city of where the passport was issued from. And within your rule book that also, you know, you have to pull out to look at, it tells you for each country what the valid issuing cities are. But that was such an arduous process that I just never worried about that. I always just focused on the other details. And if I happened to miss an issuing city, it was rare enough that I sort of just ate that as a warning or like a...
Yeah,
you know.
I went through that same process. That was the first thing I got docked on, though, is that an issuing city was wrong, and I was like, oh, no. So then I, like, kept that rule book out, but partly because I wanted to, like, check it enough times that I didn't need to check it down the line because I just knew what the issuing cities for certain countries were. But, yeah, I was still, like, well, if I miss this one, like, that's the one thing. I'll check everything else, like, their date of birth and their name and, like, you know, what their work permit says that they're here for, like, the length of time. You have to prioritize that.
Yeah, and so one of the things that they'll always come up with something like really small to get you on. So on like work permits and residency permits, there's like a particular stamp, and sometimes that stamp is wrong, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, because somebody like gets like a forger stamp, stamp forger. So like there's a bunch of like forged documents that start coming through that look close, but they aren't the real thing.
Right. And even I found too, there was like sex sometimes would be wrong. And I was like, how am I supposed to figure this out?
Oh, yeah. And then you get the photo scanner. So like there were times where I was like, this says my guy's like, this says you are a female. Is this correct? And the person's like, it is correct on the passport. And it's like, please step into the photo booth. And then you take like a nude photo of them. It's like very like TSA body scanner.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's very totalitarian, but yes, it's also very TSA body scanner.
That's what I said.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of different things you have to go on every day. There's like there's a story around this too, where you're being checked by management of the government is checking in on you and making sure that you're doing stuff right. And then there's certain people that will repeatedly come around to you. I forget the gentleman's name, but there's a guy who has a really funny, he comes first and he's like, I don't need a passport.
Georgie.
And he's like, Georgie.
Georgie.
Love Georgie.
And then he comes later and he's got like a hand-drawn passport and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, eventually. He comes up like six times or something. And then eventually he does bring the real paperwork that he needs. And when that moment came, I was like, Georgie, this is a big, big moment for you. Like you're going through.
Well, he does that, but then he's three or four times after that, he tries to sneak contraband through.
Yeah, he does.
I didn't make it that far. I need to finish this game.
It's funny when you, like, if you detain him, he's like, oh, okay. It's all right. I know the cops, like we're cool. We'll figure it out.
And he's like, it's just a little bit of pills. It's fine. It's not anything big. I just have a couple drugs.
I think
don't
he offers you some at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and then, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, there's a relatively happy ending to his story, at least in my playthrough.
What happened to him on your playthrough?
So eventually I don't know if this is for everyone or for branches or what, but eventually at the end, he comes to you because eventually all of the Ars Token passports get seized, and he gives you a Republia or whatever it is, the country. He gives you one of their passports.
Oh, I didn't get that ending.
And gives you a way to escape. And so, like, at that point, you can choose to abandon your family and go alone, which is, like, one semi-happy ending. Or you can, like, steal people from that country. You can confiscate their passports and then give them to your family and get your whole family out. But eventually, at the end, he came by and he's like, I'm not trying to come in. I just want to... I made a big, you know, like, haul or whatever, and he gives you a whole bunch of cash. He's like, thanks, and leaves.
So, there's also the storyline around Ezek. Did you play around with that?
Yeah, I got the Ezek ending. They're like a secret organization trying to overthrow Arstotska.
Yeah, the government of Arstotska.
The government, of course, yes.
They approached me and they were trying to get an informant or something through, and I totally missed them the first time, and they were like, in 3 days our next person's coming through, and then they give you like a little like decoder card with their names. I didn't know how to use it the first time. I figured it out for the second time.
Yeah, you have to line it up right, and it will match what and you figure out who you should let through.
I had a lot of plates spinning with these guys though, because I was working with them, but then there was also the guard that was detaining people and he was giving me a cut, and so I was like, I wasn't going out of my way to detain people, but if there was the option to detain, I was like, you know what, I'm hitting the button. You showed up with the wrong paperwork.
Well, you know that they're not disappeared, because I've detained Georgie once or twice and he was
I never detained I never detained Georgie. I always just gave him the rejected stamp.
So so the first time I played this actually was like way back in like 2014, and I played it on a flight from Europe to the US. And I remember I played it completely straight. So, like, as glorious as I could make Arstotska, I was trying to make Arstotska as glorious as possible. So I got, like, the government ending on that run. But this latest time, I was trying to do everything for the underground. And if you do it right, eventually the underground is like, yeah, we're going to help you and get your family out. So that's how... You end up with that one. But there's also times your entire family can die, and that's an ending. Did you guys get the banner on the wall from the guy who is the soccer fan?
I got that. I got the certificate of satisfactory achievement from my manager. That's up on the wall.
Whatever happens with the banner, does something happen with it? He came back later, and I gave it back to him because he was like, my coach needs it.
No, so if you have it up and your inspector comes, he docks your pay and it says if you have something up on the wall again, then you will get fired. So that is another ending you can do. He like has his mistress come through at one point, and if you miss her, he like fucks you up and he fires you.
Yeah, that's another ending. You get like thrown into forced labor or something like that. I think there's 20 endings.
20 endings to the game, yeah. So there's a whole bunch. There's also the like SS guy, who MOA supervisor, who looks like an SS character.
Yeah, he's the one that gives you the audit at the end, right? So if your government ending probably ended with him.
Yeah, and he was like, you did a great job. Now you get to move up to a different block, but you keep your same job.
Do you know what happens? Because you get options at the end of each day sometimes to move to better housing.
Yeah.
And it gives you different costs for rent and then like heat. But what does that do? Do you know if there's anything tied to that?
I don't think there's anything tied to it. So at one point, a guy gives you a ton of money secretly,
right?
And you can like burn it or give it back or keep it. And so on my playthrough where I was helping Ezek, I kept it and I moved into a new apartment. And what happened was the next day, they were like, no, the government seized your assets and kicked you out of that apartment.
Yeah, your neighbors rat you out.
Yeah, but you just keep playing. It's fine.
Well, for mine, I did the exact same thing. They don't kick you out of the apartment, but they give you the option to like downgrade your apartment. But you have to pay money to pay less in rent. to do that. But then also, luckily, that was where I had the second, like, was it EZAC, the organization or whatever?
Yeah, EZAC.
The second informant came through, and they were like, let him through. He'll clear up this whole, like, finance situation with the government for you.
Yeah. That's what happened to me, too, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. There's a ton of moral decisions for you to make in this game. So, like, you can detain people or not detain people to make extra money. There's, like, an engineer comes through who's like, if you see people who are engineers, I'll give you money if you recommend them, if you give them my card. So I did that, and that's, like, something you do to make extra money on the side.
It's cool.
There's a whole bunch of shit.
There's a bunch of, like, little subplots that, you know, if you do them, you can get, like, an achievement coin at the end, and it's interesting that, yeah, there are these little narratives that kind of break up the monotony of every day. But they're like these little ethical challenges, too. How loyal are you to...
When I was just playing earlier, I opened the window. It was like the second person like drops a bomb in my thing. And then the guard that's giving me a cut on my detainee fee is like, oh, this is an amateur bomb. Like, you got it. And I didn't know how to open it. You have to like unscrew the things.
So it
blew up a couple of times. But I was like, guy, there's a bomb here on my desk. Like, can you help me out? You're the security guard. But he was very cool about it.
He tells you what to do once you do open it, though.
Right. Yeah. Eventually I figured it out, but...
There's also the point where you get guys who jump over the border and you have to shoot them or tranquilize them.
Yeah, that's right, so, where I am now.
Yeah, so that's what also happens. I mean, news events happen throughout this game that change up, as we mentioned, how you play the game. And the core gameplay loop around checking passports, I think, is quite addictive. It's pretty fun and challenging in order to pass enough people through to make sure that you have enough money to live, but also... trying to figure out your moral quandaries that you have to make. It's an addictive gameplay.
It's great for like bursts. I feel like I find myself playing in like 20, 30 minute increments, and then I'm like, perfect, all right, I'll come back and I'll do the same thing tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I played a run straight through when I was playing this for this podcast. It's like I think for if you want to do it straight through, it's like 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
Yeah, it's 31 days is the full length. I guess you could end early if you hit an earlier ending,
right?
But yeah, I appreciate that it was in bite-sized chunks. I do wish that there was more about the management side outside of like the day to day, as far as like paying for, you know, your rent and your food and stuff. Like, it seemed like I would always just alternate, you know, turning off the heat and not paying my family, getting enough food, they get sick and cold, and then I can just sort of pay the next time and everything's better.
Yeah, I was kind of relieved when my uncle and mother-in-law died, because I was like, finally I can like keep my son and wife healthy and like, you know, get a couple of nice things for me, you know? Like,
my son wanted some sort of toy for his birthday, and I was like, fuck that, dude, you can't, it's too expensive. At one point
I bought it for him. I don't know what that got me. I don't think that got me anything. He might have... Does he give you a drawing don't do it for him? I think maybe the drawing... You get a drawing that you can hang on the wall.
Okay.
From your kid. So that must be what it is. Because I think he wants like a box of crayons or something.
Oh, okay.
Now that I think of it.
I was just like, that's too rich for my blood today, bud.
Did you guys get the chance to adopt your niece?
No.
Oh, no. I didn't get to do that yet.
I didn't adopt her. It says she disappears and you don't know where she went, but...
Yeah, last thing I need is another mouth to feed.
Yeah,
you know?
I didn't need another mouth to feed. I had my whole family at that point.
Yeah, it's a crazy game. It is a very interesting game. I think it's mechanically good. I think it's fun to play multiple times. I think it's a good game.
I think it's super good, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So where does this game go on our endless list is what we need to discuss, which currently goes from number 1, Super Mario 64, all the way down to number 90, Jurassic Park Trespasser. This will be our 91st entry. I think it's our third indie game. We have Hotline Miami on there. And then we also have, what's the other?
Shovel Knight.
Shovel Knight, that's right.
Cuphead? Is Cuphead indie?
I guess that could be.
Yeah, I think it was funded by Microsoft, but it could be indie.
Is Oregon Trail an indie game?
It's got to be before games even were games. So. Yeah,
it's just the original game.
I would say indie games is like a thing from like 2009, 2008.
No, I know. So. But just the history of that game that we got into last week.
It's true. It's true. Where does it go? Where do we want to start?
So I think this game's super good. Even though I haven't finished it yet, I am committed to finishing it. So I think high on the list, if that's not too spicy a take for you guys.
No, right, I think it goes pretty high. I'm just looking at Oregon Trail here, and I'm not sure how to analyze.
I was going to say Oregon Trail's at 25, and it you know went above Dishonored and Batman: Arkham Asylum, which is kind of where I always like to start for like good games at the top of the list for where we work our way up.
I don't think this game is better than Hotline Miami. I'll say that.
Interesting.
I don't know if people agree or disagree.
I think the story's better than Hotline Miami, but I think that the gameplay and the music are better with Hotline Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm inclined to think that Hotline Miami is the better game too. This is a really good game, but Hotline Miami is just like, I don't know. It's got some X factors.
On the flip side, I think this game is better than Mortal Kombat 1 at 30.
I agree.
All right, so we've narrowed it down to 22 Hotline Miami and 30 Mortal Kombat. It's somewhere in there. Would you guys rather walk up or walk down?
I think that it's better than Streets of Rage.
Let's walk up. So I think it's better than Mortal Kombat and Streets of Rage.
I think it's better than Streets of Rage as well. I think Streets of Rage is very good, but it's a little... Streets of Rage 1 is a little one note. And despite
it's a beat 'em up.
This game being about the monotony of going to work every day, I still think there's more variation and more excitement.
I think this game is better than Dead Space.
Steve, how do you feel about that?
I think it's like from a gameplay perspective, I think the gameplay loop is more addictive, and I think that the gameplay combined, I think just the overall game is a tighter game than Dead Space as a complete package.
I like this game more than I like Dead Space, is what I'll say about it. Dead Space, I think has a lot good going on, despite what, you know, some of the qualms I had with it on the pod. So I'd put this above Dead Space.
I can accept that. I think we underrated Dead Space, but given where it is on the list, I agree that it should surpass it.
I think we underrated Hotline Miami. So whenever we do that re-rank, I've got my eye on Hotline Miami. So, okay. You know.
Well, let's. I mean, I think this game's better than Batman: Arkham Asylum, which is 27.
I agree with that statement. I'm not a super big fan of Arkham Asylum. I know it's a great superhero game, and I know it's got a pretty good story. I think
we were saying last week, you know, like that's like an entry point to a series that becomes better.
Right.
I like Arkham Asylum a lot, but this feels like a more ambitious game in certain ways, and just kind of more handcrafted. So I'm fine with putting it above that.
Yeah, especially for like an indie game, I think it's to compare this against Arkham Asylum, which came out, you know, what was it, 5 years before it. I just think overall, it's just a tight. It's got a better story. It's more interesting from
some
a gameplay.
Some more
design.
Complete kind of vision for me, or an achievement of that vision.
Right.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Does it go above Dishonored?
Not for me personally, but I'm a huge Dishonored stan, so that's just my love of Dishonored there.
Matt, talk me into putting this game above Dishonored.
Talk you into putting it above Dishonored. Dishonored is good. Alright, let's break it down. Dishonored has, I think, the best part about Dishonored is its art, design, and, like, world. I think the mechanically Dishonored is a sort of stripped down, like, thief game. Like, it's, I had never thought that the, like, you know, progressing through a level was all that great mechanically. Like, I guess it was fun to find the lore and stuff. And again, I think, like, walking through the world and things like that were enjoyable. But it still seems a little just standard to me, the gameplay.
Well, it's a first-person perspective, and I think that's where the standard element comes in there, too. Because you're just, like, moving around in a world. It has some puzzle elements to how you move through the world. Like, trying to, like, set things up where you, like, you know, you do these three things, and then you can get this one guy in another way, and if you do these other four things, you can get him in a different way. But this is a puzzle game, so I don't know. It's kind of apples and oranges.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're here for, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I know. That's why we do this.
I don't know. I think Dishonored's good. I just think this is a, you know, a, like I said, kind it's of like a complete vision. It's just,
yeah.
I wouldn't add anything to this game.
Right.
Maybe I'd add a little more, like I said, of the management outside of the day-to-day, but that's not really the point of the game. The point of the game is the day-to-day.
And everything feeds into that, right? So, like, the story feeds into that. The resource management feeds into that. So it's, like, a very total package together. Even, like, the music with the monotonous rhythm of the music ties into that. The drabness of the art design ties into that.
Yep.
So
I will say on the music, I don't know if this was the same for you guys, but I didn't get any music like while you're actually playing. It's just quiet.
No,
so
it's just quiet.
I went
in between
to Spotify
the days.
And found the 1982 like top 100 Billboard, and I'll say that 1982 was not a great year for music. There's a lot of bad songs in that top 100. Ballads were hot.
You know what? That might just because you're dealing with the top 100 for that year. You know, I'm sure there's some deep cuts for 1982 that you're missing out.
I don't know. 100 songs is still a lot. Like, you'd think there'd be more good ones in there.
You got to take that up with Billboard.
I'm looking at this. Were you at the Hot 100 or the top 100?
It said top one. It was like a playlist on Spotify.
Oh my god. Physical by Olivia Newton-John.
I mean, that was one of the better songs I heard.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see Eye of the Tiger at number two. Are you ready to retract your statement?
How did that get to number? Although you got "Don't You Want Me" by the Human League. That's
"Ebony and Ivory" by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder. I mean, that's in the contest for best song of all time. I think we can all agree, right?
Yeah, this is up and down. You got "Tainted Love" by the Soft Cell there, but.
Yeah,
some of these.
There's
like
just only
Toto's,
so many.
Toto's Rosanna.
You know, the 80s were finding their footing in 1982. You know, it wasn't fully the 80s yet.
I would contend that the 80s started in 1979, but that's just me. The 80s musically started in 1979. Yeah, that's when they found their footing.
When did the 70s end then? 1978.
I don't know, but you had in 79 like Gary Numan and Cars, and you had Unknown Pleasures by. Joy Division, which like set the tone for it, and even like David Bowie was putting out his trilogy before that led up to 79.
You definitely had a lot of famous bands in the 80s that were getting started in the late 70s, so
yeah,
I think no, I agree,
but nevertheless,
anyway, back to the topic
to break.
I don't know if I could make a compelling argument as to why it's better than Dishonored. I just don't think Dishonored is, I think Dishonored is good but not great,
and I think this game is great. Right?
I think this game is great.
So we should we put it above Dishonored, and then we come up against, I don't know how we do this, but we do this frequently, where back-to-back weeks we have games against games that we just put on the list, but Oregon Trail.
I think
the original indie game.
I feel like we're down in like the 60s, like not 25, the Oregon Trail.
I don't think Papers, Please is a better game than Oregon Trail.
Then I'll just, Steve, if you feel that way too, I guess I just have to concede that point because
I think you see Oregon Trail at number 25, Matt. It's not there for no reason.
I'm curious too. I have to go back and listen to the pod and find out exactly how it got here, how we ended up in this mess. But nevertheless, you guys
a lot of fond third grade memories, I think, is how we got here.
Nostalgia. It's a hell of a drug.
Can you quickly or succinctly tell me why Oregon Trail is a better game than this?
It holds up. and it's from originally 1985. It's fun to play. It's fun to go back to. It's a quick play. Every time you play, it's a little bit different. And
I would argue that Papers, Please is not really doing anything different than what the Oregon Trail does. Like, you have kind of a story of, like, your family that you're trying to keep alive. There's resource management. It's kind of in this, like, pixelated 2D space. It's trying to teach you something about history.
The entire UI of Papers, Please is, like, both functional and, like, artistic.
Yeah, you know, no, it has a great UI. I'm not disputing that. But I just think that there's some dots you can connect between what you're kind of doing in terms of gameplay but with Oregon Trail and Papers, Please.
Yes, I would also say that you don't get Papers, Please without Oregon Trail.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right. Explain.
I think that the resource management portion of it is very similar to Oregon Trail. Just in general.
This is what I'm saying.
Lucas Pope went back and you're managing your family, but I don't know. Are these the only two games that's ever happened?
If I gotta adjust my pace so that somebody with dysentery in the back of the wagon, like, and adjust their rations, like, am I really doing something different than spending the extra $5 for medicine and heat for my family in between days checking passports here? It's pretty similar.
You guys seem to feel strongly about this, so I don't know if I have the enthusiasm to overturn.
It gets murky, right? And you have to make judgment calls. And I think that, obviously from like an art perspective, like this Papers, Please is miles ahead. An interesting gameplay mechanic perspective, I played Papers, Please like a couple times over the last like 5 to 10 years. So, or last 7 years since it came out, or 6 years since I started playing it. And I enjoy it every time I come to it. I enjoy Oregon Trail every time I come to it as well. It's a different thing. So I don't know. For me personally, they're very similar games in how much fun I get out of playing them. So I could go either way.
I think for an argument in favor of Papers, Please, though, like, the puzzle element is something that exists there that doesn't exist in Oregon Trail if we're comparing them. Like, there's threads you can connect between the two, but I do think that there's like a level of kind of puzzle design and game design. Like, it goes to the art factor that you were just saying with Papers, Please. Like, I think I probably like Papers, Please more as a game. So my argument for Oregon Trail is based partly on nostalgia and legacy too, but it's quite a nostalgic and legacy based argument there. Like, I don't know. It could go either way.
So where do we put this game?
Number one, let's just do it. Screw it. All the way at the top.
I think we should put it at 25, call it a day, push Oregon Trail down.
Wow, that was easy.
Yeah.
Let's just do it.
Yeah, you don't think it's better than Castlevania at 24?
I struggle with it.
We are approaching the Hotline Miami at 22 now.
I struggle with that. Because I think I enjoy Castlevania. I think I enjoy beating Castlevania more than I enjoy playing any aspect of Papers, Please.
Okay.
I'm okay with Papers, Please going over Oregon Trail, as long as we give Oregon Trail its due. I think it's already gotten its due. That's what I'm just making sure we reinforce that here.
Let's put Papers, Please at 25, then.
Sounds good to me.
All right, let's do it.
Cool. We have a new number 25 on our endless list. It is titled Papers, Please, the video game. You can find it on Steam. It's on iOS. It's on the Vita. If you happen to own a Vita, it'll be there. I don't know very many people who own one of those these days, but nevertheless, it's there.
Does Vita have a touchscreen? How do you play it with a... I wonder how you play this game with a D-pad.
I don't know. I originally played this on a tablet, on an iPad.
Yeah, but you can touch, right?
Right, right. Like, and it's much easier actually to play it on a tablet, because you pick up your finger and move it places as opposed to dragging the mouse.
Yeah.
So it's much easier. I think that's how it was originally designed, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I have to look it up, what like gameplay on a D-pad or joystick looks like for this game.
They actually, like, I think 2 weeks ago or a month ago when this podcast comes out, Limited Run actually just released this physically on Vita, and it like sold out like instantly. Because it's a very popular game. So.
Interesting.
Our new number 25 is Papers, Please. You can find our complete endless list on our podcast description. It's on our Medium page. Our 91st entry in number 25 is Papers, Please. If you have qualms about where we listed this game, if you think you should go higher, you can send us an email. itsobadpod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and add us at itsobadpod to yell at us because we suck at our jobs of describing where a video game should go on a list. So that is ridiculous. But nevertheless, we are going to be back next week for another episode where we will add another game. And who knows what that game will be. But our congratulations to Papers, Please. And thank you, Steve, for joining us for this podcast.
Thank you, Mike.
And thank you, Matt.
Thanks. It was glorious.
Glory to Aristotska.
Thanks, guys.